Hi guys, so in my latest podcast, I am delighted to be joined by Philip Swift. He's a seasoned detective turned insurance expert leading the UK's motor insurance loss adjuster claims management and adjusting, the CMA. A former police detective, Philip has over 40 years of investigation experience, starting as a Metropolitan Police Constable on the gritty streets of South London in 1979, and working in the high-stakes world of international narcotics enforcement. Yep, this guy was the real-deal Miami Vice, but he didn't drive a white Testarossa, and we're going to be sticking to cars, not drugs, on this episode, especially as he now specializes in car theft and road traffic collisions, claims, and fraud. So this is going to be a fascinating discussion. So first of all, welcome, Philip. How are you doing?
Well, thank you, and thank you for that very flattering introduction.
Do you still have the suits with the shoulder pads and that stuff?
Well, funny enough, I have one, and I so wanted that crocodile.
Excellent. So, tell us a little bit about what you do now, so that people can put this into context and understand, you know, where you're coming from on this.
Yes, day to day, my role is to assist claims handlers with undertaking inquiries in relation to vehicle thefts. We try to come at it from the basis that we're sorting the wheat from the chaff. You know, those who make appropriate claims should get appropriate payment, and they should get it promptly. And that's our aim, to speed the process up and to make sure those that are caused distress, inconvenience, financial hardship because somebody's nicked their motor is duly compensated, can put it behind them, and move on with their life.
And in terms of your experience when it comes to not so much accident collision, we can talk about later, but in particular car thefts and stolen cars, was that something that you specialized in when you were in the forces?
Amusingly, in the southeast of London, yes. But by accident, you simply fell over it. Whether it was cloned individual your cars, or people rushing in to say somebody's stealing my vehicle. And it was very interesting to see, you know, just how much of this was occurring, albeit more casually than today. Vehicles were much easier to steal.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. In fact, you know, just to sort of put a sort of historical context onto this, I mean, I'm just anecdotally, and you can confirm whether or not my perceptions are correct or not, but I feel that in the 80s, car theft was a big issue. And not just car theft, not just stealing cars, but breaking into cars, stealing your car stereo, that sort of stuff. It was fundamentally rife. I mean, I remember back in the day having to remove my stereo every single time I left the car. I mean, that was something that we all used to do at the time. Then I felt that in the following decades, it had kind of tailed off a little bit and the cars had got safer and it wasn't such a big problem. However, I think that now it's sort of become a big issue again. And it's car theft, it's carjacking, but it's also things like, okay, maybe not the stereo anymore, but like stealing catalytic converters and stuff like that. Is that correct to feel like it's on the increase at the moment?
Great summary. 1979, when I was involved as a South East London policeman, I could expect once a week to be chasing a stolen car. There were so many of them just being taken casually. There was also a great recovery rate, which obviously as a police officer made my job a lot simpler and made a lot more people happy. By the 90s, we were seeing possibly, I think the heyday was sort of 400,000 vehicles a year. And wow. Then toward the end of the 90s, and then come 2000, we saw immobilizers coming in. And the manufacturers who don't, even to this day, get enough praise, designed out joyriding. You know, the simple overcoming of a physical lock on the door or the ignition was no longer sufficient to drive the car. And I do feel that the... you know, the likes of Jaguar Land Rover, BMW, Lexus, Ford, you know, they're being overlooked. They were the real good guys back then, and car crime plummeted.
If I can put this into a context that maybe people would kind of understand in a pop culture context, if you like, when in the movies they used to show, like, you break into a car and you find two pieces of wire and you put them together. Like, I suppose in the 70s and 80s, maybe that was a thing, but soon after, that was impossible, right?
Yeah, you're gone in 60 seconds, touch. I mean, yeah. Simply, it was that easy. You would manhandle, you would overcome the ignition lock. You know, getting into a vehicle was straightforward. If you couldn't manage to work out the door lock, then you'd use, you know, a favorite key, which was the brick, and put it through the window. We had the most simple of devices. Bent windscreen washer blades, simply bending it through 90 degrees, pushing it into the door lock, and physically overcoming it. Then, as you say, messing about with the wires. But now we have engine management units. We have transponder keys. You can do what you want to the wires. However, unless the engine management unit receives the code from the key, it's not going to start.
So this is the thing. I mean, you mentioned briefly that Gone in 60 Seconds. And I remember one of the sequences, and I'm talking about the remake, not the original, the Nicolas Cage version. And I remember at one point they're trying to steal a Mercedes. And the guys go, well, there's no way we can steal it unless we get the key. And so they have to then break into a dealership to get the clone keys, I think, or whatever it was, to then try and get the car. So at that point, it was the case that cars were unstealable because of, like you say, the transponder units and what have you. But what happened now? How comes people are able to steal them now?
I think by about 10 years ago, 2013, 2014, the vehicle crime numbers had dropped considerably. But just before that, we were starting to see claims that electronic bypass was being used to overcome vehicle security, that people were mimicking keys, duplicating keys, misleading the engine management unit into thinking that there was a key there. So this sort of more sophisticated approach was starting to occur. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there's a lot of press about this, particularly of late. I think there's a lot of hype. And if you try to get any statistics on it, disappointingly, you will struggle. Burglary seems to be popular, and other methods, which suggest to me that this keyless theft is not quite as prevalent as is being made out, because you commit burglary to get the key. Thieves want the keys.
But is it correct to say that car thefts have increased compared to, like you say, when they actually tailed off in the late 90s, 2000s, etc.?
Yes, I think the some more figures are due out next week, but the last ones I saw indicated that we were up to about 130,000 a year, which would be a 25% increase in about a year, which is phenomenal. You know, that's a staggering increase. Now, add to that the value of vehicles has increased. Add to that that the recovery rate has dropped. And you, once you start looking at those sort of three statistics, and don't simply look at how many have been taken, personally, I think that's the wrong figure to look at. You want to look at how many have been found, how many are being returned to their owners and returned in good condition. It's low.
We're going to go in a bit later on in this video. We'll discuss things that people can do. But going back to what you said there, what do you put down that increase to that we've seen? Is that just purely down to burglaries, or is it down to a sort of more organized, more concerted effort to get these cars?
I think if you look at the methodology, if you look at what was happening back in the 80s and 90s, where people were taking because, well, I can't afford a taxi to get home, or I want a bit of fun, I want to drive a vehicle, you know, and they could do so casually. Manufacturers designed that out, and car crime dropped. Currently, taking the recovery rate, the return of the vehicles, the recovery rate being so low, it suggests to me that this is professional, organized crime. people are taking vehicles to profit, and sadly, they're successful.
Well, what happens to these cars? I mean, again, in this day and age, I mean, how is it not possible to find a stolen car? I mean, surely, like, you know, the way that people perceive, especially when you think about London being like the most monitored city in the world, or one of, I should say, you think that, well, surely a car that's been stolen, it should be visible somewhere within minutes, right?
You would think so, that there's a lot to that. You would think instantly, the moment a car is taken, you would think, as people are told, we'll look at automatic number plate recognition to see whether or not we can trace the vehicle. Well, hang on a minute. These are professional vehicles. These cars aren't turning up. If they're going equipped with equipment to steal a car, then they're going equipped with a set of number plates to quickly pop on each end. It doesn't matter if they steal a Mercedes and put a Ford Escort number plate each end of the vehicle. ANPR simply picks up on the number, doesn't do a correlation between vehicle registration and the type. So, you know, this organization goes beyond simply having a set of keys. Look at the three ways historically and probably currently that vehicles are disposed of. Their identity has changed so that they're sold on as a whole, they're broken for parts, or they're exported. Ringing, which was the use of salvage to apply the identity of a salvage vehicle you buy in a salvage yard onto a stolen vehicle, was to a great extent designed out. It all started in the late 80s with the introduction of the MIAFTA Motor Insurer's Anti-Fraud and Theft Register, so you could check a vehicle. That became popular, available to the public. The public could search that in the mid-90s. So you can check any registration mark and see if it's been a total loss. And then that might sort of put you on alert that, you know, am I buying a rebuilt vehicle or am I buying one that's stolen but's had the salvage identity placed on it? Breaking for parts seems to be the most, well, I say seems to be the most popular. It seems to be popular. It's highlighted a lot. There's a lot of chop shop mentions in the press these days. Vehicles being taken and broken down for the components, possibly to rebuild damaged vehicles, possibly to sell on the parts. There are other methods that, or other ways that these components can be used. And then you've got export, which is simply shipping the vehicle abroad. And again, don't be misled into thinking, oh, well, they're putting a whole vehicle on board. Some of these, you know, we've seen them where they're cut in half to make them fit in one container, because it's not about getting the other end and somebody adding a false identity or driving the vehicle as is. They'll take the parts there.
In your experience, what do you think is actually happening? Because you talk a little bit about there what the perceptions are, particularly in media. Because to my mind, I can't fathom how each of these three things is happening. So first of all, when you look at buying used cars these days, even when you go onto Auto Trader, without even having to pay for an HPI check or whatever, it tells you, you know, if, you know, that tells you the minimum status of the vehicle. So you're like, okay, well, I can do an HPI check, but it's already told me that it's not written off, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In terms of parts, and I may be mistaken, my memory may be hazy, but I thought that there was a system that had come into place at some point a few decades ago where they would register the part numbers of the cars so that you'd be able to track whether or not that was legitimate parts or whether it was a stolen car. And thirdly, with exports, like, my brain just boggles. I'm like, how do you export a stolen car? How does that even work?
Yeah, with the three aspects, the vehicles that are advertised for sale, there will be clones. There will be vehicles that are bearing the identity of another. In my experience, the thieves with those tend to spend more time trying to hide their identity than the cars. If there are two vehicles out there with the same registration mark, I think it's reasonable to assume sooner or later this is going to surface. The thieves know this, so they'll spend a lot more time trying to hide who they are and distance themselves from the vehicle, because at the end of the day, they're just after the money for the stolen car. They certainly don't want to be caught. This talk of ringing, you know, it has to a great extent been designed out. The salvage side, there are still vehicles that are unrecorded salvage, which are problematic, so they can be rebuilt using stolen parts. the components themselves, when they're being acquired, there are online websites that can be used to dispose of these. You know, they can even be sold through other suppliers, other people who are undertaking repairs. Export, problem there seems to be that we don't interfere, and understandably, we don't interfere with our shipping containers to a great extent. I think the statistic for those containers that are searched before they leave the country is very low. When you look at the docks and the systems they have in place for moving these containers, it's a very slick operation. Stopping a container to examine it can really throw a spanner in the works. You know, that there's a balance to be had here. It's also a resource issue. You know, who's going to look at all of these? You know, yeah. I think the police have more than enough to do at the moment without.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, actually, that's the point that I wanted to come on to next. Before we do that, actually, I do recall, I think it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago, there was a bunch of cars, like the 2 or 3 cars in succession. I think if I remember correctly, it was in Pakistan, that they were recovered, and apparently they'd been stolen here, and they'd ended up in Pakistan. And they were high-value cars like Range Rovers and Land Cruisers and stuff like that.
Yeah, and repatriation is another problem. You know, I think the crooks understand. But once it's out of the country, getting it back can be a nightmare. You know, I'm dealing with one at the moment that's in Europe. It's been a year trying to get this car back. You know, thieves haven't benefited from it in so much as they were stopped in possession of it a year ago. But it's just a headache trying to go through the hoops that the foreign courts expect.
But what happens in that case? If the car is recovered, is it going back to the owner, or is it belonging to the insurance company at that point, right? Because assume it's already been paid out for.
Yeah, it's a case of going back to the insurance company if it's been paid out. You know, there are occasions where members of the public do not receive a payment from the insurance company. They may have breached their terms and conditions, the method of the theft may not be covered. One of the things that we try to do that sets us apart is we do monitor the on and off stolen register. And we understand that some people make mistakes. You know, their vehicles are taken in circumstances that the insurance company say, no, I'm very sorry, that's a risk we don't cover. But it doesn't stop us if we learn that the vehicle's been found, telling the insured, look, it's come off the police national computer, lost or stolen register. Go get it. So there are occasions when, you know, we're not perceived as the cause of the bad news. We can be we can present some good news to people simply by this understanding of theft, the processes, and what can be done to speed matters along.
In your experience, do owners? I mean, once obviously it belongs to the insurance company, but do owners actually appreciate having the opportunity to be reunited with their cars?
Seldom, unless they're a classic.
They've moved on.
Yeah, by the time they come back, and I think there's a stigma attached to, you know, there's a memory associated with it. That car's been stolen before. Yeah. And I always think that these things need to be very carefully examined as to how they've been driven and also, you know, what might be in them.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. This is interesting. There was a car that I discovered back when I was in the UAE, and there was a car. I won't mention what car it was, but if anybody's watching this video and they care to look over my right shoulder, they'll probably get a clue. But it's a car that I discovered in Sharjah. It's one of my all-time favorites, and it appeared to have been abandoned. So, like, I did the door knocking thing. I asked around, and I asked a couple of guys in my network that sort of know about these cars. And then the word came back that it was probably, you know, an ex-Russian mafia car. I tracked it back with the company that built it. And they said, well, it was built in the UK, sold to America. The last they knew, it ended up in Europe. But they didn't know what happened to it after that. So it was fair to assume that that car had been stolen. And then it disappeared for a while. So I'm guessing it must have been impounded. And then it turned up again a few years later at a garage. And apparently now somebody's got it and they're restoring it. And I had spoken to that guy years ago, about 5 years ago, I'd spoken to him, and he sent me a message. He said, I've got the car. And I'm like, what are you going to do with it? He said, I'm going to restore it. I'm like, you're probably going to spend 50, 60 grand on that car. You may be able to register it in the UAE, but as far as I understand, he'd never be able to take it out of the country, right?
Well, that would depend on their laws, but bringing it back here, there's various hoops to go through. It seems to be a possibility. Whether or not you want to risk investing that much and then subsequently somebody turn around and say, I'm claiming title to that vehicle and you've got a dispute. No, I'm not so sure I'd risk it.
Yeah, that's what I thought. All right, well, I'm glad you confirmed my own views on that one. Let's go back to what you touched on earlier, which was the recovery and the sort of police activity around that. As you said earlier in your career when you were here in London, you did see a fairly good recovery rate. But at the moment, and again, just going back to sort of anecdotal experiences that I've seen, a few years ago, I would say probably 10, 15 years ago, at least 15 years ago, definitely, I had a car. It was parked out on the street. And I got a knock on the door one day, and it was a couple of police officers. And they were like, is this your car? I'm like, yeah, what's happened? And they're like, well, it's fine. The car's still there, but the number plates have been stolen. I'm like, oh, okay. And then they were very helpful. They told me exactly what I needed to do, how I needed to do it, et cetera, et cetera. And they were just, we're just here to advise you and tell you this has happened and we'll take a report and et cetera, et cetera. So I thought that was great. I think it was 2 weeks later, I even got a follow-up call. And they were like, are you okay? You've been a victim of a crime. Do you need help? I was like, wow, this is fantastic. This is such a good service, right? So that was like, so that was maybe 15 plus years ago. Fast forward to a couple of years ago here where I live. And there was a car that was in our car park for quite a while. And obviously all the neighbors are all on the WhatsApp group. We're like, whose car is that? Whose car is that? And then somebody figured out it's a stolen car. So it was told. We told the police it's a stolen car. And the police really just didn't care. You know, it just sat there. And eventually somehow the owner was tracked, I think, through one of the local apps or whatever. And then the owner just came and picked up the car. And it felt like the level of apathy that now exists towards car theft was very, shall I say, disheartening as a car person. Do you feel that that is the case, or is that just a perception on our part?
No, I think you're right. I have, you know, I was an officer with a small O, police officer, as opposed to a senior officer. And I think you'll find that the bulk of officers with the small O who are at the sharp end want to do everything they can to prevent and detect crime. I have no doubt of that. The guys that I speak to weekly, you know, they're there for the victims. They get very frustrated. But the processes that have followed, even though these have been highlighted, the problems highlighted, to me just haven't been followed up. I remember going through training school in 1979, and being told that if you want an easy...
Where were you trained, by the way? Where was
Sorry?
That wasn't in Hendon, was it?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Right, so that's down the road for me, because that's the famous police training academy here, isn't it?
I spent many weeks at Hendon. Past first time, I hasten to add. But, I remember my training school instructor saying that, you know, if you want an easy life in the police force, avoid prisoners, property, and ladies who carry out the oldest profession in the world. They were the three P's. But it seems to have changed. The three P's now to seem to be proportionality, performance indicators, and priorities. And where does vehicle crime fall into that? Let's go back 5 years, 2019. In January 2019, certainly it was being raised in the West Midlands that vehicle crime was a problem. It had increased substantially. It was identified, recognized as an issue. I remember, I think it was the crime commissioner there got involved and said that they were going to spearhead a vehicle theft task force. And it was reported in early 2019. They met the 15th of January 2019, and I thought, great, all of a sudden, you know, we've got some people going to do some stuff. Let's try and get involved in this. We've got a lot of experience in the insurance industry. CMA, a company, have been at the sharp end for years. So I put together a document, And I remember it's the 13th of March, 2019. And it had about 18 or 19 ideas to try and assist. And I submitted that. And I sat back and I waited. And I probably gave it a year. I then asked about this task force that was to meet every 6 months and discuss these issues. And I asked for the notes, and I got some notes for the January 2019 meeting. Over years, I've asked for the subsequent notes for their meetings because I don't understand. If in 2019 they identified it as a problem, why has crime gone up? We've got a task force. So I struggled. I felt that I was being obstructed. But ultimately, having worked through Freedom of Information Act applications to West Midlands Police, the Crime Commissioner, the National Police Chief Councils, the Metropolitan Police, the Home Office, I've eventually found out they never met again.
Wow. 2019 till now.
Yep. Their ideas, etc. The report I submitted all seems to have come to nothing. And I can't understand why. This is an identified problem with victims out there, and they came up with, there were some interesting ideas. I mean, one of them, which we've already touched upon, was to identify the methodologies, because unless you know how people are stealing vehicles, how are you going to prevent it? Nobody has recorded to this day, even though they identified this. I've been to two or three constabularies and said, look, I need to know your statistics. You're telling me that this is vehicle security bypass, compromise, but I'd like the figures. How many are burglary? How many are robbery, carjacking? How many are security bypass? And they come back and they say, sorry, Section 12 of the Freedom of Information Act says you exceed the costs to produce this information. It's too expensive because it's not readily retrievable. In other words, they're not holding the data, even though they identified this as being necessary. It's very frustrating.
I mean, without that, how can you even move forward? Because like you say, I mean, you know, until you know the symptoms of the disease, you can't come up with a cure for it.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, it's all well and good bashing on the door of manufacturers. And that seems to have been all that came of the 2019 meeting. If I was a manufacturer, I'd be going back to the police and saying, well, hang on a minute, what have you done?
Yeah.
You know, you cannot tell us as a manufacturer that I have to go round to a buyer's house and secure their property, put an alarm on it, because actually most of these keys or a lot of these keys are being taken from by burglary. Nothing to do with us as the manufacturer. You know, it's very difficult to understand why this would be permitted, and that may be the wrong word to use, but it's how it feels when you see the number of vehicles stolen increase to, as I say, about 130,000, and try and get your head around a figure. You know, when I speak about figures, hand on heart, I wouldn't want to stand up and say to anybody, this is how many vehicles were stolen last year. I've gone to the DVLA, I've asked them, so I've got a fairly good idea. But I saw that West Midlands wrote to the Home Office saying, oh, there were 50,000 vehicles stolen last year. And I think this is a year or so ago. The Home Office came back and said, well, there was 100,000. I've been to Kent. Kent Police were in the press because in 2022, they had a report of 622 car thefts. Now, I specified car, not vehicle. And when I went to the, because that struck me as low. So I went to the DVLA. They gave me the complete breakdown of 2002 vehicles. Again, vehicles. I sorted those by cars, and it was over 1,000. I've gone back to Kent because I've said, well, look, if you've got 622 that have gone missing, you've already looked at the stats. Your recovery rate is 6%, apparently. This is what has been reported. what happened to the other 400 odd vehicles? They've just refused to give me the information. It's very, very difficult to understand the size of this problem, but it is concerning that the information is not readily available.
I find that completely extraordinary that we can't get verified data on the number of cars stolen in the year. I mean, you know, we have data on cars being sold. We know how many are being exported. We know how many are being built. We know how many used cars are being sold. How do we not know this?
Yeah, it's everybody seems to have some people will say, well, there's a vehicle stolen. Well, a vehicle might be anything from a quad bike, you know, up to a heavy, massive heavy goods vehicle. But they can be broken down into cars. I know with the Kent information, the 622, when I looked at it, they hadn't reported on, I think it was the Dover area. So again, the figures were skewed. There seems to be a lack of national approach. There's no joined up thinking. Everybody does different things. The 2019 vehicle theft task force also suggested a script. I think it was 12 questions that should be asked. Now, this is a central task force, which in theory could have farmed out to all our 50 plus constabularies and said, in future, when a crime is reported, we want you to ask these 12 questions. To my knowledge, that was never followed up. It never occurred. Yet, funnily enough...
There's no progress currently?
Sorry?
There's no progress currently on this task
force? Not that I've seen. Funnily enough, and I picked up on that, because in the report that I submitted in March 2019, it was one of my comments that there needs to be standardization. Now, that 2019 task force meeting had about 20 people, and I think they met in London, and it was an impressive team, an impressive group. When I asked, because amongst them was the National Police Chief Councils, when I went to the MPCC and asked them for their information on the meeting, they don't have any. They don't have any notes. It would seem as though they went along and didn't trouble to take notes. Now, that may be because they were going to be circulated afterwards. But when I asked about what became of that, they at least volunteered that they've spoken with the staff and nobody seems to have any knowledge of it, of the task force, which suggests to me that they didn't take up the mantle, that they didn't follow on with what had been discussed and the outcomes, the actions that were to occur.
It feels like quite a depressing picture that's being painted in terms of if your car is being stolen, there's not much that is going to happen because they haven't even got around to having meetings about it yet. That's pretty much what it sounds like right now.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, the depressing thing is that when the aspect to come out of this was the publication of stolen vehicle figures. So every 6 months or so, I think the idea was that the West Midlands Crime Commissioner would publish figures that would show how many vehicles were being stolen. In other words, you know, which ones you might want to avoid. The depressing part from my point of view was that it struck me that it was almost like a score sheet for criminals. They could look at this and go, oh, well, actually, we're getting better, because there wasn't a deterrent. There wasn't anything going on in the background. Again, depression. We seem to have dropped the ball for 5 years. They've had 5 easy years. Why wouldn't crime, vehicle crime, theft, increase? If you've got a team, you've got organizations, authorities who know what's going on, who've seen this, but elect to do nothing or little about it. Surely the increase indicates that they didn't do anything or didn't do enough, and that the criminal fraternity are taking advantage of this.
It's almost like giving them a menu of like, here you go, here's a menu of cars. But, you know, here's a hierarchy of what you should be. And talking of that, of course, as we know, right now in London, particularly in the southeast, it's impossible to insure a Range Rover because they're the most stolen cars out there right now. It's almost like it's a self-fulfilling thing where you're telling people this is the most popular car to be stolen. And people are like, well, I must go and steal more of those then because that must be popular right now.
Yeah, I have a great sympathy for manufacturers. I was there in 2000. I went along to a Kent Constabulary, North Kent meeting, which was an operation based upon theft methodology. And they kindly invited me, and it was fascinating. And personally, I think that they had the right approach. Admittedly, this was when VCRAT, the Vehicle Crime Action Reduction Team, came into play, and the government was saying, we're going to make sure that vehicle crime reduces by 30%. Now, the government weren't silly. They knew engine management units were coming in, they knew transponder keys were coming in, and this alone would cut the figures. But Kent put together this project, and it's an opportunity missed, something that could have been done now or should be done now in part.
So we've got manufacturers have obviously done their part. We've discussed that. You deal with the insurance industry. The insurance industry also does R&D on this sort of thing, right?
Sorry, does?
The insurance industry also does R&D on, you know, preventing thefts and stuff like that.
Sorry, R&D?
Yeah, research and development.
Beg your pardon. Yeah, very much so. I work in the insurance industry. You know, people will expect me to big them up. But again, look back at what's happened and the developments. We spoke earlier about ringing and salvage. It was the insurance industry who started the total loss register and permitted it subsequently to be made available to the public. We saw ringing drop off because total loss records are available. Again, it almost decided out. We're now looking at the theft figures in more detail. Why? Well, one of the reasons, as you say, is that some vehicles are becoming difficult to insure. People are being hit in the pocket. That's making them stand up and make noise. You know, it shouldn't come to this. This is the outcome of the 5 years of sitting back. I've expressed my sympathy for manufacturers. Jaguar Land Rover produce some impressive vehicles. People want them. There's big demand. There is probably great demand in some countries that are not as well developed as us, whose roads may not be as impressive as ours, and who may need 4x4 vehicles for all sorts of reasons, which makes it a very desirable vehicle to take either as a whole or to strip for its components. So simply producing something that people want, to me, being criticized for that and without the statistics for how they're being taken, it seems a little unfair.
But insurance companies also, like, because I remember when we talked about earlier, when immobilizers were introduced, when I was owning a Supra or whatever, and I was too young to get it insured, but they were like, okay, but you can cut your insurance if you get an immobilizer fitted and stuff like that. And this was back in the day when you had an immobilizer and then you had to have a little chip at the end of your keychain on a long chain so that you could put the key in one side and put the chip into the hidden plug on the other side to disable the immobilizer to get it started. But I think that to a large extent, that requirement from the insurance industry accelerated the development of those technologies, surely.
Yeah, I agree. I remember the number of Sierra Cosworths that went missing and going along and seeing some of these being tested with the kit you're describing. And I had fitted as a test to one of my vehicles, a little Ford Fiesta 1.6 Sport, a go-kart. And I remember I had to touch two points under the dash to create a circuit. But it worked. It was simple, but it worked. But we did it because cars were being nicked. You know, it was a necessity. You want to wake up in the morning and find your car there? Of course you do.
So let's move on to what people can do, and let's just to put it into context. I mean, when we talk about car theft, we don't want to be frivolous when we talk about car theft, because for a lot of people it's a very, very serious thing. We're talking anything from somebody like me, like with a classic car. I mean, it's my pride and joy. You know, I do not want to lose it. To a family, to a mother that maybe is picking a kid up from school and returns to find that her car is missing, and then what should she do then? So it's a very serious thing for a lot of people. And for some people, it's a big investment as well. So moving ahead to what would be your recommendations for people in terms of keeping their car safe, either keeping the car safe as a whole, but also the issues regarding things like, you know, catalytic converter thefts and whatnot.
Yeah, with vehicle theft, the main claims we are seeing at the moment are key burglary, people taking keys. So there you go. Keep the keys safe. Do something with them. Do something a little unusual. You know, have a particular place in the house that you keep them in, a particular vessel that is not obvious. You know, people say, well, put them away from the door so that they can't be interfered. Well, yeah, maybe. You might find a biscuit tin you want to put in the cupboard. It's not only about keeping your vehicle keys safe, but if you're anything like me, you can get very frustrated where you forget where you put them the night before. So I do just that. I have a particular place now. It is a tin that I keep safe. They always go there, and I know where they're going to be. And the family does, but nobody else will. But keys are so important. Keep them on your person. You know, be mindful of them if you're putting them in a jacket. Zip-up pocket. Don't leave your jacket hang over the back of a chair. People will be looking for these. Don't leave the keys in the vehicle if it's unattended. You hear a lot said about de-icing these days, leaving your engine running, let the car warm up to de-ice the car. I saw a report somewhere in the West Country that one day, I think it was this year, four cars had been taken using this method alone. It's about safeguarding. You are taking a risk if you leave your car running and you're not within the vicinity of it. Go on further. Don't simply stay in the vicinity of it. Get in the car. You know, there is only so much you can do to protect the vehicle, but do you really want an argument with an insurance company later when they say, well, I'm very sorry, but you went inside to make a cup of tea, you left it running? No. If that car's running, you're sat in the driver's seat. There will always be instances, there can be instances, where people will become violent, intimate, threats of violence, and nothing you're going to do is going to prevent that. You know, there are circumstances where thefts occur. Of course, there are. There are people who will break into your house and they will find the keys, but don't make it easy for them. Whenever you leave your vehicle with someone, anyone, think
before
in terms
you go
of
on,
the keys.
If I can just about the starting your car thing. What about remote starting? Because I know a lot of American cars come with a remote starter. Is that okay, or is that also?
I haven't encountered one that has been stolen. Personally, it would make me uncomfortable. I wouldn't do it. It's simply, if the vehicle started and it can be driven, the positive would be if it stops. You know, if the thief stops, then he can't get it started again. But really, again, risk. Think risk. Is it a risk worth taking? For me, no. But I'm in the industry.
So, also with the keys, there's often a lot of discussion regarding the transponder type thefts that they talk about. Is that a real, because a lot of people say buy these pouches, I think what they call Faraday pouches, aren't they?
Faraday.
They go buy the pouches and do this and put in lead lines. Is that a thing?
I hear it. I read about it. People talk about this relay method of stealing vehicles, and it appears that it occurs. It's not an aspect of vehicle theft I get involved in because I come in after the event. I can only sort of listen to or be advised by the police or speak to the public. Again, why not? Why not do it? But at the same time, go back to what I've mentioned about putting them somewhere safe. If they're far enough away from the door, if you've got them in a tin or some sort of container, you know, you would expect them to be safe.
And you touched there upon, you know, aspects of if you're in the car and if somebody's determined to take it. I mean, essentially, we're talking about carjacking at this point. There's no point resisting that, right?
No, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's an asset. It's an item of property. I draw the parallel to those people who are now, you know, stealing watches, small items, high value that they want to take and palm off on somebody else. You know, is it really worth resisting confrontation? Now, different if you're me, you know, 6'4", ex-rugby player with a face that people get tired of hitting. You know, I might, if a young girl tried to take my, sorry, a young person, not necessarily be a girl, tried to take my vehicle, I may try to resist. But no, it's not, and I make light of it, but why would you, you know, I'm dealing with one at the moment where the poor chap was simply threatened verbally when he got out of the car, and put myself in my family's position, I'd expect them to do the same.
It's interesting you talked about that one, because there's also been incidents like that, haven't they, where somebody fakes an accident or whatever, and it's just an excuse to get you out of the car so that somebody else then takes the car. I mean, is there anything that people can do to be wary of that or to protect themselves from that sort of scenario?
You're in a difficult position if somebody's set up an accident, because there's likely damage to the vehicle. And as a result, you're obliged to stop, and they know this, and you're going to get out. Coming back to what we were speaking about earlier, why would they do this? And the answer is keys. You know, these scenarios that we're talking about, whilst there's a lot of hype and a lot of conversation about keyless theft, there's a lot of scenarios which are simply designed to get keys. So if you get out of the vehicle, what did we say earlier? You're not in the car, the keys are on you. Keep the keys on you. If you're involved in a collision, as I say to my family members, the first thing to do, phone someone. If you've got a dash cam, then hopefully you'll get some information from that. You'll have it held. You might want to take that out, or use your mobile phone that you're calling on to take some images. But again, don't resist. If somebody's trying to take your vehicle, they might want your mobile phone. They may not want there to be images. So if you can, get help. I generally tend, you know, I hope that my family members will always have somebody with them in the vehicle. But that's not always practical, and it's not always, it's not ideal. Quite a lot of us drive just one person in the car.
There's also, like I said, the incidence of catalytic converters, and there's been quite alarming footage. In fact, even from the Northwest London where I live, where some of the thieves will blatantly come to somebody's drive, their front drive, and because a lot of these doors now have doorbell cameras, what have you, and so they have recordings of them, literally threatening the residents, even if the residents become aware that there's somebody on their drive trying to, you know, either take their car or take the catalytic converter from the car. They're so blatant about it that they've just threatened them not to come out. What can you do in that case?
The only thing I would suggest you can do is call the police. There really is very little. With catalytic converters, I think the statistic at the moment is something like the increase is phenomenal. It's something like a 450% increase year on year. They can be taken in a couple of minutes. They don't have to. You know, some of the people I've discussed with have said, well, I always thought they'd be sat underneath for a while unbolting things. No. On occasions, they'll simply, you know, saw through the metal. They're not worried about the noise that'll make. They'll cut through it because they're not after necessarily the component for resale. They're after the actual metal in there, the value. Yeah, exactly. So, no, you can do so much to try and prevent. You can get markings for them. But is any criminal really going to be too worried about those? You can get additional security for them, something to consider. But again, people sort of balance the cost of this with the likelihood, the risk we come back to. Where you park the vehicle, be well lit, maybe try and park so that you're in a position that getting underneath will not be that easy or can be easily monitored. The Ring doorbells or similar, yep, install those. There's a chance there'll be an identity, if not of the suspects, of the vehicle that they're using. But a crime in progress is a 999 call, nothing less. And unfortunately, as you say, when you're confronted, the other thing they'll probably do is turn around and say, and don't call the police. You know, I have friends. One was an ex-policeman who one night woke up and found that his caravan was being stolen off his drive. And they simply looked at him in the face and said, give us 10 minutes before you call the police. And then they smashed one of the windows on the caravan to say, if you call before, we'll come back and do the rest.
Wow. You know? Oh, my goodness.
These are criminals. You know, they don't want to be caught. They don't have the morals that we do. And really, just don't. It's not worth the confrontation.
Yeah, safety is important. Yeah. Somebody messaged me yesterday, and literally this is yesterday, and they asked me this question. And honestly, like, I didn't know about this. They said, is there such a thing, hacking the CAN bus? Apparently, you can get in through the headlights of a vehicle and start it that way. Are you aware of something like that?
There are various methodologies. There's been video of people spending time under the wheel arches. There was certainly a vehicle type that some years ago they were talking about removing the headlamp, and that would give you access to the wiring, which would in particular enable you to cut the alarm. You know, all of these, it's not an aspect of theft that I get involved in. I generally see the result as opposed to the cause. But we try and stay abreast because on occasions, you know, this can have a bearing on what we ask people and how we investigate and in turn how we report to insurers. But yes, I have no doubt. I do recall somebody reporting that a car had been recovered, quite a prestigious vehicle, and somewhere on the body panel, they'd used effectively a can opener, one of the old-fashioned spike and lever, and cut a little flap, pulled it back, and got in. They knew where to go to bypass. Oh, wow. I remember seeing the flap photo.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I mean, these guys, you know, they're taking your vehicle, and a lot of them go to chop shops. They're stripping them down. They know cars. They understand the electrics. They understand where everything is because they're stripping them. This is their business. They're mechanics.
Any other tips that you would give our listeners and viewers in terms of how they can look after their car and protect it as much as possible without endangering themselves?
Yeah, I'm big on trackers. And I generally like aftermarket trackers that can be installed ideally where it won't be obvious, it won't be known. So a professional install. Because if your vehicle's gone, you want it back. If it's going to be taken, then the idea is to get it back as soon as possible in the best condition possible. So a tracker, to my way of thinking, is the sort of, you know, especially if you're being threatened, let it go. I stand a good chance of recovering it. With regard to trackers, do bear in mind, you know, not all trackers are equal. I've recently been dealing with one where, staggeringly, it wasn't working. It was a substantial install on a vehicle, a very impressive vehicle. So if you're going to install a tracker, make sure you have access to the data. Even if, for example, a finance company installs the tracker, speak to them, make sure that you have access to the data or that it's working properly.
Anything else people can do?
Well, when it comes to actually having, you know, your vehicle's not stolen, be mindful that whenever you're away from the vehicle and you've left it with another. So if you take your vehicle to the main dealer, you can generally be pretty certain that, you know, they're going to treat your car with respect. There are some garages that you may be less comfortable with. Remember, you've given them the key to the vehicle. On the windscreen is the visible VIN, and you may even have left documentation in the glove compartment. They have access. You know, don't just think in terms of garages. You may valet the vehicle. You know, all of these provide somebody the opportunity not only to possess the keys, but also to access the OBD, the onboard diagnostics port, and get into the vehicle. There have been reports of people fitting trackers to cars, anything from simple air tags up to more sophisticated items, so they can follow it. You know, be mindful when you leave your keys with somebody else who you're leaving it with. I know there's only so much you can do, and it's, you know, you end up being paranoid if you're not careful. But yeah, it's that key to vehicle relationship. People want those keys. So yeah, when it comes to having a vehicle taken from you, you know, again, think keys all the time.
That's amazing. So thank you very much for this. This is fantastic. I hope that people have really enjoyed this. And if you have, then do please leave some comments below. And if you'd like us to do, and if you're up for it, Philip, maybe to explore more the road traffic accident side of things, maybe in a future podcast, we could cover that. And between now and then, maybe you and I should get together and write the script for the next remake of Gone in 60 Seconds, I think.
Yes, yeah. You know, and then there's more to do. I mean, a couple of subjects just to finish off on is, you know, we can do something on avoiding buying a stolen car. That would certainly. And for all of you who've listened to me waffle on, God forbid you have to, but if you make an insurance claim, please go to our website and put in /help. cmaclaims.co.uk/help. We've tried to put together, I was going to say an idiot's guide, but that would be unkind, but just a guide on how to manage your own claim. And I think it's intended to avoid delays. Nobody wants delays when it comes to the issue. And it's there, it's free of charge, anybody can use it.
That's fantastic. I'll put the link for that in the description so that people can find it. And the website you said, and I'll put the link for the website. Are you on social media as well, or?
I'm on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, okay.
The company's on LinkedIn. But yes, feel free to link with me if you have an issue. And you know, I'm easily contactable via LinkedIn or the website, so.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
No, thank you.
Phil, this has been fantastic. And I hope to catch up with you again very, very soon.
Thank you for your time. It's very kind of you to invite me. I'm flattered. Take care. A brown car guy.
Hope you enjoyed that video. If you did, please, please hit the like button and share this video as well if you can. And while you're at it, check out these guys who also sponsor my content. I am deeply grateful to them because it helps me to buy new equipment, put fuel in the cars, and yes, buy a cup of coffee. You can do the same. Just go here or right here on YouTube. Just hit these three little dots down here and click on thanks. Make sure you're signed in first. My content is free. But this is how you can help me keep it that way. I may even send you a gift. Oh, by the way, watch this next.